You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 31 January. We've got U.S. core PCE inflation data later today. This is what the Fed mostly watches for interest rates. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Cape Town via Houghton. On the show today, Scott Lowe from PSG Old Oak. Highs and lows from the first month. Yep, January is almost done. Johan Manowick, he is from Stanlib Asset Management. The impact of the US withdrawal from the Paris Agreement and thoughts for me and being a tourist in your own city, town or country. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: global minimum tax now a reality in South Africa, first tax returns due in 2026, and non-compliance will be costly. Business Day: Nersa carves 250 billion rand chunk out of Eskom revenue application. Eskom hike less than half what it asked for. Morning markets: US was green, S&P and NASDAQ both up 0.5%. Across in the east, we are mixed. We've got Sydney down 0.1%, Tokyo up 1%, and Hong Kong, 10 cent, still closed for Chinese New Year. Commodities: green. Gold, 2,852. That's the futures price. Brent, 77.31. Platinum, 1,029. Palladium, 1,023. Rand is 1855. Bitcoin 104,100. Top 40 opening call, about 150 points to the green, 0.2% on the upside.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skulk Lowe from PSG Old Oak. Skulk, appreciate the time, and I can't believe I'm going to say this because I sound like an old man, but I can't believe tomorrow is February. First month of 2025 is almost done and dusted. And there's been a bunch. We've had rate cuts and no cuts from Jerome Powell. We've had Nvidia collapses. We got gold at highs. What's your high and low lights from the first month, from January 25?
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the MoneyWeb listeners. Wow, what a golden start to the year. Huh? Saw what I did there? So let's try and go through this very, very quickly. Because if we look at the start of the year, off to a rocky start. And then in the second part of January, we just had a turnaround. We've got, you just mentioned, if we look at the futures, currency futures up 0.2, if that is anything to go by, I think we're going to see a JSE all share ending January in a 2% in the green. That's always a very, very good start, starting the first month with more than 2% growth. S&P 500, 3.3%. But if you think that was the leading sort of driver in the US, mm-hmm. then think again, because the Dow Jones in industrial, that was actually up 5.6%. That's always a very good indication. When I recently released my first article for the year, where I actually drilled through all these big financial research houses, and I tried to find these golden threads. And I think one of the golden threads was, mm-hmm. yes, they do feel that the U.S. market are extremely elevated. I'm using the word extremely because they're using it. They're saying we're sitting with serious elevated markets. And that NVIDIA sort of showed us that if you don't hit it in the sweet spot, you're going to see quite big retracements. And when you see these type of movements where the S&P 500 sort of lag, or let's call it the Dow Jones, actually outrun the S&P 500, it gives you an indication that people are reverting back closer towards, let's call it, value type of stocks. That's sort of one of the trends that they're looking at, but not focusing too much. We also had, you know, some serious moves on the FTSE 100, also up, you know, 5.9% this month. Hang Seng, for the little that it was open, 1.2% in the green. So in general, not a bad first month for the year. When we look at the stocks, this is where things really get interesting for me. Really, really. I mean, let's just start at the winners. You know, and I'm going to talk JSE stocks, because if we're going to talk international stocks, we're going to sit here, you know, by 8 o'clock. So out of the top 10 best performers, let's just use the top three. Harmony, 38%. This is 1 month. This is 1 month, and the month is not over yet because you just mentioned gold still trading at all-time highs. Harmony up 38.3%. Anglo Gold 29.6%, and Gold Fields 29.4%. That is year-to-date figures. This is 30-day trading. I mean, this is just unbelievable thinking of these type of returns. But I mean, out of the top 10, we had all five of the gold diggers, you know, Harmony, Anglo Gold, mm-hmm. Gold Fields, Durban Roodepoort, Pan, all five of them in the top 10. And you can also add Sibanye-Stillwater because they still also got some gold exposure. They're also in the top 10. So really, really good start for the golds. But so some of the other commodity stocks, we had Northern in there, Kumba Iron Ore. So those also, the only two non-commodity stocks, we had Richemont and MTN. Richemont coming out with a very good trading update. I think about a week ago, and that really just pushed them. I think that one day they were up over 15% when they brought out the trading update. Also up 29% in January. And then again, MTN. I mean, a few tariffs been brought in Nigeria, and that just helped them also have a wonderful month, 28.5%. So let's just quickly touch on the losers. This is also really interesting because in the latter part of last year, you had this two-pot theme. The two-pot theme where all these billions were withdrawn and people say, well, people are gonna take this two-pot money and mostly go and spend that at the retailers, mostly clothing retailers. And we had a wonderful time out of them. But this year, not after a good start, the Fashini Group down 14.5%, Mr. Price 14.3% down, and Truworths down 14.2%. Nice little trend there as well. Up, you know, let's call it the worst three performers, all retailers. But yeah, I think that's out of the stocks that stood out for me. I think one of the most volatile stocks, most probably in January, most probably will be Sasol. I mean, very good on one stage, very bad on one stage. Talks of most probably them seeing, you know, a spin-off of their chemical business. That saw them the one day, I think it was about a week or two ago, where they also, you know, increased over 15% of the days. But to look at these commodities, Brent, we're looking at Brent about 2% for the month, 2.4% to be exact. Gold, as you just mentioned, trading at all-time highs, 6.5% up for the year. But don't disregard the poor man's gold, namely silver. Silver also up 8.8%, copper 7.6%, and platinum, wait for it, big drum roll, 14% up for January. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is good for the South African market. This is good for our economy. And, yeah, long may it last.
I take your point. I mean, it's 1 month, but if we could have a commodity rally in 2025, that would be truly awesome. That would be something very, very special. We'll leave it there. Skull Globe, PSG, Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Johan Manerick. He is head of private markets at StanLib Asset Management. Johan, appreciate the time today. Reference to the Paris Agreement, one of the first executive orders President Trump signed was withdrawing the US from the agreement. Your view that this does not necessarily detract from South Africa's sort of reforming its energy sector. Why are you not overly concerned by the withdrawal?
A couple of reasons. Thank you very much. That's right. First is, of course, that this is not the first time that the U.S. is withdrawing. It's done so before in Trump's first period of being president. But just a reminder quickly, what the Paris Agreement does is it was struck in December 2015. And in terms thereof, countries come together to agree certain carbon emission targets. It's all aimed at limiting global warming to certain targets that have been set. By the way, some of those might already in the interim have been breached.
Yeah.
But the important point is that South Africa's context is very, very different. South Africa's changes to its energy supply sector is really aimed at modernizing and liberalizing energy supply within the country. They're very good, substantive, can I say, commercial objectives, therefore. And as part of achieving those, it also ends up meeting its commitments under the Paris Accord. So it is a bigger picture within South Africa and possibly other emerging economies too, whereby it's really time for it to change the manner in which it produces electricity and gets the country on a more sustainable, this is an economic and commercial sustainable path. And in the process, we also get to meet some of these greener objectives, if I can use that term.
Yeah, I take your point, and I want to bring it home in a moment. But before I do, I mean, is the US going to face challenges as a result of this decision? Notwithstanding, you point out President Trump has done this before. President Biden took them straight back in. So we don't know what will happen in 4 years. But is it going to put challenges for this administration?
Look, of course, it's the political objective of those seeking it that's being achieved here. So I think we need to acknowledge that. But that said, I think to the extent that a large world-leading country like the US, you know, exits what is an inevitable path toward more efficient forms of energy production, I think it is a pity. And I think what it does is it opens the playing field to other industrial complexes, in particular China and Europe, to take on the leadership and this, both ownership but also the development of some of these technologies. I mean, it's not the only place we can point to where Chinese companies and industry is making massive and phenomenal and sometimes market-moving advances in technology development. But in this instance, I think the state is doing itself a disservice. I do have to just point out that what we're talking about is the commitment at federal government level.
Yes.
Obviously, within industry, at state and city level, there is enormous participation in renewable and other greener sources of energy. In fact, some of the states within the US have completely embraced these technologies for the reason, again, possibly less to do with ideological views on the climate, etc., but really for compelling commercial and economic reasons.
Absolutely. And my next point is going to be around the investment case for the rest of the world to kind of participate and continue with the Paris Agreement. And it is, as you said, it's commercially viable, it's efficiency, it's modernizing what in many parts of the world is very, very old energy infrastructure.
Yeah, I'm going to put it like this. I think firstly, the commercial case attempt to stem climate change is enormous. So that in itself is a very worthy enterprise by humanity to come together, which is really what the Paris Accord is trying to do. Humanity come together, see if you can stem or alter the course of climate change, because the consequences are enormously negative and costly. I think that's point number one. Mm-hmm. Of course, the question might be, can we do it as a species on this planet and as a race? You know, are all these efforts not potentially in vain? And look, I think in time, will be able to say whether or not the steps that are being taken will be truly effective. And I think then the last point, which is what we're talking about as investors, obviously as investors we hope we can stem the tide. We hope we can avoid the costs of climate change. But we are also saying that the mere fact of investing in these technologies has been an enormously profitable enterprise and has taken humanity to a fascinating place where the way that we used to produce energy, really since the Middle Ages by burning coal and other fossil fuels, is just no longer the way that we're likely to do it in the future. And that in itself has been a worthy endeavor. And possibly, arguably, whether or not the Paris Accord is why, maybe it was on the table already, but perhaps it has provided impetus because at national level, people have gathered and said, wow, let's try and invest in some of these industries. Let's try and, you know, share technologies. And, you know, it doesn't detract from certainly the course that industry and technology and research have gone.
And I like the reminder there that our current energy process is from the Middle Ages, which was some time ago. If we bring it home to South Africa, are we with the US out of the Paris Agreement? Are we as a country able to invest in our energy requirements? Obviously, there's the just energy transition that we're looking at. I mean, do we have the capacity and I suppose the resources and finances for it?
Yeah, Simon, so firstly, we'll never have enough money, of course. As you know, we always want more. Everyone in the world always wants more. But South Africa, of course, through its remarkable and Global Standard Renewable Energy Investment Program, which is a public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. We have raised more than 200 billion rands worth of investment. Let me just emphasize that that has mainly been from local sources of funding. It's the private sector, the retirement industry, the banks, the life companies that have all piled in and made those investments. That's resulted in about 6.5 gigawatts of additional supply of energy coming on. The future challenges remain enormous, right? So can we do it all on our own? Probably not. We always want as a country to attract foreign investment. It's critical for us and uplifting our people, not only within this sphere, but many others in the economy. But really, the private sector is able to invest. The private sector is willing to invest. It's obviously what we do here in Stanlib. But I do want to say that it's important that we work with the public sector. Very often in this space of energy production, mm-hmm. we need access to national assets that are not ours. You know, we can't just go and suddenly plug yeah. in a plant that we've invested into. We need a regulatory framework. We need permission. We need to do it in an orderly way. So that partnership with government, the sovereign, has possibly less to do with using sovereign cash. We're not trying to take sovereign money. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is get the permission to invest in an orderly manner that works for the national good at the end of the day, as well as obviously for ourselves and our investors.
And in essence, you've got a proof of concept with the Stanlib, can you say, Energy Transition Fund. We've spoken about this before, but that really is, I mean, it's a working model, and the important two words there is it's working, it's doing it on the ground, and is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And the point simply being there that this is the very thing that we're looking to achieve. Look, potentially small starts, but big ambitions, working with our partners in the marketplace to grow. And it's exactly this, as we're trying to attract funding into the just energy transition theme. We're seeing a lot of opportunities within this space. I mean, load shedding, thank heavens, yeah. has abated for a while. We're very grateful for that. Everybody in the country, I think. And that said, investment is absolutely happening. The big themes at the moment are into the decentralized providers of electricity. These are people who help us to install, for instance, solar plants or wind projects at industrial sites, on shopping center roofs, at households. And really people are looking to do that because it's cheaper, longer term, more sustainable. Sustainable in the sense, please, of being available, continually available mm-hmm. sources of energy that a commercial concern or a household or retail space, etc., can rely on to deliver what it needs to for its clients and people that come through.
Yeah, and I like that. Small starts, big ambitions. We'll leave it there. Johan Manwick, Head of Private Markets, Stanlib Asset Management. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you invest in a greener and cleaner climate? It's not always so easy to do, but have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Some quick thoughts from me on being a tourist in our own country. I've been in Cape Town the last 10 days. I've been working, sure, but also Cape Town. It's a beautiful city. There's a ton to do. And I think too often, and I speak for myself here, we forget the tourist part of our country or our cities. And I know, you know, some of you are thinking, oh, Johannesburg is not much there, and the Joburg Art Gallery is by all accounts falling down around us. But I mean, we did a guided tour. I don't think I've ever done one of those in South Africa before, and was absolutely awesome. So I think being a proper tourist and getting to really see our country, well worth a time at points. That's it for today. Yesterday we asked you ahead of the MPC what rate cut we would get. Would we get the measly 25 points, maybe a 50 points? 60% of you said, nope, it's going to be that boring 0.25% cut. And it was. Just over 20% were saying no cut. The rest were saying, please, please, 0.5%. Unfortunately, they didn't hear those please. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Trusts.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.